Everywhere Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, his influence astonished everyone. He next arrived at the temple of Pana Narasimha. The Lord is so merciful. Purport. Pana Narasimha or Panakal Narasimha is located in the district of Krishna in the hills known as Mangalagiri, about 7 miles from a city known as Vijayawada. One must climb 600 steps to reach the temple. It is said that when the Lord is offered food with syrup here, he does not take more than half. Within this temple is a conch shell presented by the late king of Tanjore, and it is said that this shell was used by Lord Krishna himself. During the month of March, a great fair takes place at this temple. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnana Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapatakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinavine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. As I mentioned yesterday, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur has said that as followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can also aspire to visit all the holy places that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally visited, particularly during the time of his Madhya Leela, when soon after taking sannyas and having made Sri Jagannath Puri as his base, he went on a pilgrimage to South India. And when we do so in the association of devotees, one can feel one's life becoming perfect. So traveling to these holy places along with the loving devotees of the Lord is a very wonderful part of our devotional service. Since we are not able to physically go there, we can go there by the mercy of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. And we can follow the different places that Mahaprabhu went. Yesterday we saw that soon after Mahaprabhu left Puri, he went to Alalanath and then onwards towards South India. And the first major holy place that he came to was Kurmakshetra or Kurmasthan, the place where the Lord has appeared in the tortoise, the form of the tortoise incarnation, the Kurma avatar. So we discussed something about the temples there. As I also mentioned yesterday, that the focus on this series of lectures is not so much on what Mahaprabhu did in these places, the pastimes that Mahaprabhu personally performed, the dialogues and conversations he had, etc., but more so on the holy place itself, the temple or the history of that place, the pastimes that took place there, etc. So moving on from Kurmasthan, he came to the place known as Simhachalam, where there is the deity of Jiyada Narasimha. This was the place, if you remember, from where Hiranyakashipu threw Prahlad down from the hilltop into the ocean and then threw a mountain on top of him, and the Lord personally jumped and he dove through the air and he lifted the mountain just as it was about to fall on Prahlad. And he rescued Prahlad like that, and then Prahlad prayed to the Lord that he might kindly manifest himself in a combined form of Varahadev, the form that the Lord had already taken to kill Prahlad's uncle Hiranyaksha, and also the form that he was going to take shortly in the future when he would manifest himself as Lord Narasimha and save Prahlad. So the form of at Simhachalam Narasimha, Jiyada Narasimha, is special because it is Varaha Narasimha, combined form. So having left Simhachalam, he went further southwards, more or less along the coast at a little distance, and that is when he came to the banks of the Godavari. The Godavari is one of the holy rivers of India, one of the seven holy rivers, and probably sometime towards the end of this month we'll have another series of lectures on the holy rivers of India: Ganga, Yamuna, Godavari, Kaveri, Saraswati, and some others. Very fascinating pastimes. These rivers are very important for us. So Godavari is also called the Southern Ganga, the Dakshin Ganga. And it comes all the way from Nasik, which is northeast of Bombay, all the way down to the south, and then empties out into the Bay of Bengal, which is on the eastern side of the peninsula of India. So he came to the banks of the Godavari, and we have a few pictures here. Okay. So this is the beautiful Godavari River, and we'll see more about that later this month. But a very holy river, and on the banks of it is a place called Vidyanagar. Vidyanagar is a place that is today known as Kovur, and on the other side of the Godavari is the famous city of Rajahmundry, what is called today as Rajahmundry in Andhra Pradesh. Original name was Rajamahendravaram, and it's got distorted and it's called today Rajahmundry. So this Rajahmundry is the cultural capital of that whole province, that state of Andhra Pradesh. So across the Godavari River, from where Rajamahendravaram is, there is Kovur. This is the place where Mahaprabhu came. He came, he crossed over, and he came to Kovur, and that is where he had this most famous meeting. Now, sometimes Godavari at this place goes dry, unfortunately, at certain places. And this is the place where Mahaprabhu met Ramananda Rai. If you remember, before Mahaprabhu left Jagannath Puri, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had made a request to him that when you go south, please visit the banks of the Godavari at Vidyanagar, where the governor of the province, Ramananda Rai, resides. Now that area of Godavari, that bank of the Godavari where Vidyanagar is, was under the rule of the Utkal Kalinga kings, the Gajapati kings, especially Pratap Rudra at that time, who was also a great devotee of Mahaprabhu. So this province came under the Gajapati king. So Ramananda Rai was a representative, he was the viceroy or the governor looking after that province on behalf of the king. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had told him, please go there and meet Ramananda Rai, don't neglect him thinking that he's a governor, that he's not a Brahmana or something like that. He's actually a very, very elevated devotee. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came there deliberately to this place to meet Ramananda Rai. And there ensued a momentous historic dialogue between the two, in which Mahaprabhu asked many fundamental questions about the goal of life to Ramananda Rai. And each time Ramananda Rai answered something, Mahaprabhu asked him a question that took him higher and higher and higher. And this went on for quite a long time. Initially, of course, Ramananda Rai was not able to recognize Mahaprabhu. He came and offered obeisances. He came there with a whole retinue of officers and security guards. And finally, Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai embraced each other. And everyone, the onlookers, were struck with wonder to see this. And they decided to meet in the evening in solitude because they did not want to conduct this conversation in full public view. So Ramananda Rai came later. This is a picture of their first meeting on the bank of the Godavari at Kovur, what was known as Vidyanagar, which is also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And finally, of course, after the whole conversation happened, and Mahaprabhu had instructed Ramananda Rai, he revealed himself to Ramananda Rai in his real feature. And that time Ramananda Rai understood that there was no difference between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was a combined form of Radharani and Krishna. He is Krishna in the mood of Radharani and also with her complexion. So after he did that, he had this many days of conversations with Ramananda Rai, he instructed him to return to Jagannath Puri and to join him there in his pastimes. Ramananda Rai later went back, and the king was pleased to award him a pension, which was a full salary, without working. Because you want to serve Mahaprabhu, so you don't have to come to office anymore. I'll give you your pension, full salary. Sometimes we wish employers in London could have done the same. Oh, you want to serve Krishna? Okay, so I'll give you a pension with your full salary. It doesn't work out like that somehow. So it would help if he had kings like Pratap Rudra. So he finished this dialogue, this conversation, and went further southwards. And then he came to another place called Mangalagiri. Giri means hill. Mangal means auspicious. So this is the auspicious hill where it is said the personification of auspiciousness, Lakshmi Devi, performed penances. And here we have a very, very famous deity of Lord Narasimha Dev, who is called Pana Narasimha or Pana Kala Narasimha. This is the verse that we read about today. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions the name of this temple and the place, Mangalgiri, and that one has to climb 600 steps to reach this place, and that the Lord is offered syrup, a special kind, and we'll talk about the recipe a little later. So this Mangalgiri or Pana Narasimha temple is one of the famous temples of Lord Narasimha Dev in Andhra Pradesh. This state of Andhra Pradesh, among all the states in India, is the one that has a predominance of many famous Narasimha temples. That's why in Andhra Pradesh, Narasimha is a common name that parents give children. You know? So you'll find many Narasimhas there. So the three most famous Narasimha temples in Andhra Pradesh, and indeed in the whole of India, are number one, Ahobilam Narasimha. We'll talk about that later at the end of today's session. There is also Simhachalam, which we discussed yesterday, and there is this Mangalagiri, Pana Narasimha. So these three Narasimha temples are the most famous temples, in at least in Andhra Pradesh, and they're all very ancient temples. So here, this Mangalgiri is supposed to be one of the eight Mahakshetrams where Lord Vishnu manifested himself in the deity form. Some of the others are like Tirupati, Venkatadri, or Srirangam, which we'll talk about tomorrow. So there are eight such places, and in this list of eight, there is the mention of a place called Totadri, which is actually Mangalagiri. Adri also means hill. And curiously enough, this hill is shaped like an elephant. And there's a bit of a history with that. That there was a king called Pariyatra, who had a son called Rashyashringi. And somehow his body wasn't quite right. So in order to restore it to its, you know, normal shape, he came to this place, the place that is today known as Mangalagiri. And he performed penances there. And the demigods also came there. They were very pleased. He stayed there for several years and performed penances. And his father came. He got news of his sons residing at this place. He came to take him back, but the son wanted to stay there to serve Lord Vishnu. So he assumed the form of a hill to serve Lord Vishnu. And this theme recurs fairly often in our devotional discussions. We see in Braj, for example, Brahma appeared as a hill in Barsana. Shiva appeared as a hill in Nandagram. So this theme of a devotee of the Lord wanting to serve in the form of a hill is quite common. You know? So Govardhan also. So then anyway, that's where Mangalgiri has a very ancient history. Actually, there are three Narasimha temples right here. Anyway, you can see a bird's eye view. It's very beautiful. The characteristic of temples in South India like this are that they have very tall spires. They're called gopurams. And this gopuram that you see here is probably the tallest in the whole of Andhra Pradesh. And how they manage to do all this is also a wonder. There are many temples like this with huge gopurams. And all made of stone. And then on top you have another. You can see the top there, further stone. In some places the stone is fitted there. Without modern day construction equipment, how they manage to first of all carve these things and make them stand up like that and then take another stone piece on top of the whole temple. These are mysteries. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So at the foothill, temple that you see on the left side of the screen is Lakshmi Narasimha temple. So that's the first Narasimha temple. There's one at the foothill, there is one on the hill, and there is one on the top of the hill. So in Mangalgiri, you will find three Narasimha temples. So Lakshmi Narasimha temple is the one that is at the foothill of the temple. And it is said that Yudhishthir Maharaj himself was the one who established this deity here, and he worshipped here for some time when they were out in their exile period. On top of the hill, there is another Narasimha temple called Gandala Narasimha, but there's no deity there. There's only a lamp that represents Lord Narasimha Dev. However, the main deity, the main temple of Lord Narasimha in this region is on the hill, in between these two other temples. And that is the Panakala or Pana Narasimha temple. So when we speak of Mangalagiri Narasimha temple, we actually refer to this temple. That is the middle temple in between these other two temples. So that also has a strong history. Mahaprabhu visited this place, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footprints were installed by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur there. So as you climb the hill, at a certain point you will see the footprints of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there. And so naturally devotees of ISKCON, we all go there, we stop there. I had the good fortune of going to these places for the first time last year. I have also never been to these places myself, including one of the other places we'll come to, Ahobilam Narasimha. And I was thinking, why have I not been to these places in all these years? So if you all get the time, maybe on one visit to India, you can try to go to some of these places. Try to go along with other devotees, then you can relish it better. And as you go up, then you come to this temple, Pana Narasimha temple. And this deity is interesting because the deity consists only of a stone with a wide open mouth. It's not like a regular deity with a full form. Yeah. It's just a mouth. And then there is a brass mask on top of the, around this mouth, that gives us the idea of Lord Narasimha's face. He has an ugra or a fierce expression there. And in the stone also you have the club and the disc inscribed right there. So the mouth is wide open, and in this temple they feed this particular syrup in a conch shell. This conch shell is also a very ancient one. And what the syrup is made like this. You have jaggery, good. So they make it into a syrup. So the syrup of the jaggery, the liquid jaggery, then is mixed with water. And then you have cardamom and black pepper also mixed in it, along with some camphor, to also give some fragrance and taste. And the taste is delicious. So when it's mixed up, so what they do is they pour this syrup into the conch shell, and from the conch shell they pour it into the mouth of Lord Narasimha, the wide open mouth. And you can actually hear the gurgling sound. You know, when you drink, let's just say you raise your mouth and you're thirsty and you drink fast, there's a certain sound that comes, a gurgling sound, isn't it? When you drink water. So when you pour this into the mouth of Lord Narasimhadev, there's a gurgling sound. You can actually hear it. And as you keep pouring, as the pujari keeps pouring, maybe you can touch his hand and he can pour. Then the voice gets a little louder and shriller. And it is said that he drinks only half of that amount that's there in the conch shell. There's a standard conch shell. He only drinks half of that and no more. And when the half is over and you insist on pouring, then the remaining thing will just come out of the mouth. It won't go inside. So he takes that, and the rest of it that's in the conch shell is then distributed to the devotees as Mahaprasadam. The interesting thing is that despite this jaggery water being spilled all over, you won't find a single ant there. You know, generally wherever there is any sweet substance, you'll find ants in large numbers gathering there. It's a big feast for them, but here you don't find ants. So Lord Narasimha, he drinks. And it's not just a one-time thing. So that's done. One time you offer one conch shell, and he's drunk half of it, and the other half is distributed, and the next pilgrim comes along, and the pujari does it for him, and the same story repeats. There also the Lord takes half the conch shell and he's satisfied, the other half is given as prasadam. Next one comes, the same thing, he drinks only half. So this is quite an interesting thing. The only temple perhaps I know of where the Lord, in any deity of the Lord, does anything like this. So in the local language, this drink is called panakam or pana. So he's called Panakala Narasimha or Pana Narasimha. And there's an interesting thing somebody said. Now, I don't know how true it is. Somebody who's a geologist or something like that may try to verify that this place was said to be some kind of a volcano earlier. But this volcano is not active now. So in ancient times, perhaps before the deity manifested, it must have been a volcano. And it is said that because it has sulfur, so the jaggery neutralizes the effect of the sulfur, and then therefore the volcanic activity in that volcano is now gone, is destroyed. So the volcano is not active anymore. Because from time immemorial, there's so much jaggery that has gone in there. You can imagine there are literally thousands of pilgrims who come every single day. And each of them insists on feeding, offering the Lord this panakam, pana narasimha. So anyway, this is an interesting pastime there. And there's another history about why jaggery water is fed to the Lord. And the history is as follows, that there was a demon called Namuchi. And the tale of Namuchi appears in several Puranas. He performed penances for a long time and he propitiated Brahma. So Brahma appeared before him and asked him, what benediction do you seek? So he knew from previous experiences, he knew from history that Brahma is not going to grant the boon of immortality. Several other people had tried that and it didn't work because Brahma said, I am not immortal, so I cannot give you the boon of immortality. So they all, these asuras, these demons, they've always tried to enter the kingdom of immortality through the back door. And they've always been unsuccessful. So this time they asked boons of different sorts. So Namuchi said, give me the boon that I will not be killed by any weapon, whether it's dry or wet. Now that covers practically everything, isn't it? Either it's wet or it's dry. So he was careful that there shouldn't be a water weapon even. So Brahma said, all right. So then he began to harass all the demigods and he created a big uproar and, you know, disturbance in the whole universe. So when demons get strong, they create a disturbance for all the law-abiding citizens, you know. So in any way, then Indra decided it was time to do something about it. So he started with his weapons, Vajra weapon, killing the soldiers of Namuchi. And then he prayed to the Lord and he created a weapon that was made of foam, which is neither wet nor dry. So he got the foam from the ocean and he skimmed the foam. You know, sometimes in milk also you have foam. So in the ocean also sometimes you have foam. So he skimmed the foam. And then the Lord gave him his Sudarshan Chakra. So then he put this Sudarshan Chakra in the foam and he let that loose at Namuchi. And Namuchi had now, in order to escape, made his size very small and he entered into a cave. And the Sudarshan Chakra chased him there. The Lord appeared in the central part of that chakra and with the foam, Namuchi was killed, and because of the heat of that weapon, his life airs were sucked out and he died. And then his blood gathered at the foothill and became a lake. And there was so much heat that was created there, and the Lord was also in such fierce anger that the demigods came there and they offered him the nectar of the higher planets, Amrita. And then the Lord was pacified. By the way, here the Lord is also called Sudarshan Narasimha because of this pastime that happened there. And so they pacified him with Amrit. So that was in Satya Yuga. In Treta Yuga, the custom was to feed him ghee. In Dwapar Yuga, it was milk. And in Kali Yuga, it is jaggery water. So therefore, in the four different ages, Narasimha Dev here has been fed different items. So his name is Pana Narasimha is probably only for Kali Yuga. Earlier days, I don't know, but I speculate he may have been called Dugdha Narasimha or Ghrita Narasimha. Ghrita means ghee and Dugdha means milk, or Amrita Narasimha or something like that. But at least in this age, he's called he's called Pana Narasimha. He's called Panaka Narasimha. So some more pictures here. Yeah. So typically you see these very tall structures. These are the gateways actually, the entrance. You can see them from a long distance, and that's the point. The temples should be easily identifiable from a long distance. And especially as you approach these temples, then you meditate on that, because that's in your mind. You are seeing this temple, and your consciousness changes from the time you see the temple from a distance. You know, like similarly with Jagannath Puri, when Mahaprabhu came for the first time to Puri, from a long distance, from several miles away, he could see the chakra on top of the Jagannath temple. He offered his obeisances, and right from there he was gazing at the temple. So even though he was miles away. So there's one important reason that temples have these long, tall spires. Yeah. And also because it is gorgeous that if ordinary houses can be tall, why not the house of the Lord? So this is the deity below, not the... Yeah, here is a place where the footprints of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are there. This Prabhupada is, by the way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. Yeah? Not Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So this was instilled probably sometime in the 1920s or something. I'm not sure of the date. So I couldn't get a picture of the mouth of, you know, that's open, that actually take. This is not the Panakala Narasimha actually. Panakala Narasimha just open with a mouth like that. So anyway, this is an interesting deity. So he moved on from here, Mahaprabhu. He went to Sri Shailam. Mahaprabhu visited even the temples of the demigods. He went to the temple of Lord Shiva, he went to the temples of Lord Goddess Durga, he went to the temples of even Skanda. Skanda Kartikeya is the son of Lord Shiva. You know, it's interesting that although our teachings are so clear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Mahaprabhu, who was playing the role of a devotee, of a sannyasi, visited these temples, these ancient historic temples of the demigods. So how do we understand this? We understand this by considering and knowing these demigods to be great devotees of the Lord. So when we go to these holy places, yes, we can go there, we can offer our respects. And certainly, even though we don't worship these demigods as independent supreme lords, we do respect them as great devotees of the Lord, and also as exalted personalities who have been personally chosen by the Lord to perform very, very important functions in the universal management. So therefore we should always offer our respect to demigods. We shouldn't disrespect them in any way or offend them. And at the same time, we should not consider them supreme. Considering them to be supreme is also an offense to them and to the Supreme Lord. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this place called Sri Shaila. So, Sri Shaila, that's also mentioned here by Kaviraj Goswami. Mallikarjuna Tirthe Jai Mahesha Dekhila Taha Sabo Loke Krishna Nama Luvaila. This is the 15th verse of the 9th chapter. Translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went to Mallikarjuna Tirtha and saw the deity of Lord Shiva there. He also induced all the people to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Purport. Mallikarjuna is also known as Sri Shaila. It is situated about 100 miles northeast of Karnula on the southern bank of the Krishna River. There are many great walls all around the village, and within the walls resides the deity known as Mallikarjuna. It is a deity of Lord Shiva and is one of the Jyotirlingas. There he saw Lord Mahadev Shiva as a servant of Lord Ram. Actually, in this place, Lord Shiva is called Mallikarjuna and he is also called Ramadas Mahadev. That Mahadev or Lord Shiva, who is a servant of Lord Ram. Generally, devotees talk of Rameshwaram, where Lord Ram worshipped Shiva. But because Ram was playing the role of an ordinary human being, although he was the Supreme Lord, but he came and at this place he worshipped Lord Shiva. Here in Sri Shaila, it is Lord Shiva who is known as Ramadas Mahadev. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, here is another view, the gateway, the Gopuram. Jyotirlingas, there are actually 12 Jyotirlinga. Linga refers to Lord Shiva's deity. Jyoti means the fire or the light. So there are 12 famous Jyotirlingas in India, and this is one of those 12 at Sri Shaila. Now there are many other places by the name of Sri Shaila, but this is the Sri Shaila, which is one of the 12 main ones, and Mahaprabhu visited here and he chanted and danced over here. And also Kaviraj Goswami mentions this is the deity. By the way, you know how to offer obeisances to a deity of Lord Shiva? How do you circumambulate? How many times are we supposed to circumambulate a deity of Lord Vishnu or Krishna? Anyone? Four times. Of course, somehow we do it three times because it's become a custom, but actually it's four times. So, for the worshippers of the demigods, there are different instructions. For Ganesh, certain number. Surya, certain number. Brahma, certain number. So, for Lord Vishnu or Krishna, it's four. And for Lord Shiva, it is half. You do half circumambulation and come back. Yes? That's how it is. And Kaviraj Goswami says that Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati, knowing that Mahaprabhu had arrived there, came in the form of Brahmanas to offer their obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu, of course, blessed them, and Mahaprabhu spent some days with Lord Shiva, it is mentioned. And the two had very intimate association and talks. They must have talked Krishna Katha, because Shiva is also a great Vaishnava. And Mahaprabhu has come in the guise of a Vaishnava, even though he is a Supreme Lord himself. So the two had very intimate talks about Krishna at Sri Shaila. And then Mahaprabhu moved on further and came to the third of the very famous Narasimha temples or holy places in Andhra Pradesh, or practically in the whole of India. That is Ahobilam. There are some other very famous Narasimha temples also. There is one near Badrinath, etc. But these three are very famous. Ahobila Narasimha. Now, Ahobila Narasimha, Ahobilam is an exceptional place. Any of you like trekking? Very few. So this place is a trekker's delight. I also had the good fortune of going here for the first time, not last year, but about 2 or 3 years ago. A wonderful experience. At some places very risky though. because you have to do some mountain climbing. And at one place, you really have to almost go on your hands and legs. You have to climb up like that, almost as if you are at certain points. And at some places, we had to actually forbid devotees from going in, although some devotees disobeyed and they secretly went anyway. They went somewhere and they climbed, and it's very dangerous at some places. And it's a sheer, steep cliff, and if you slip there, then, you know, it'll be even hard to find your body, you know. It's so risky at one place. Other places are fine, not that dangerous. But it's verdant, very lush forest, hills, pleasing, pleasant climate. And it's beautiful to go there. And fortunately, it's not been as commercialized as some of the other holy places in India. So, interestingly here, there are 9 temples of Lord Narasimhadev, 9 deities, and the other places. Ahobilam is the actual place where it is said where Hiranyakashipu resided with Prahlad. So this is the home of Hiranyakashipu, and this is where Prahlad also lived. And this is the place where Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Narasimhadev. That specific place is called the Ugra Stambha. Stambha means a pillar. So to commemorate, that is the pillar from which, of course, the original pillar doesn't exist, but that is the pillar from which Lord Narasimhadev emerged. And as you know, there was a terrific sound that emerged when that pillar exploded. And with every step that Narasimha took, the first step, different ragas, I think they say 172 ragas came out, the sound that was created, 100 and something, some number of ragas, the local people say. And we have discovered only a few of those ragas. So these ragas in classical music are not actually ordinary sound vibrations also. And therefore they're only meant for the glorification of the Lord, you know. All music, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam purports, all music is meant only for the glorification of the Lord and not for anything else. So the Lord appeared from that pillar, that is Ugra Stambha. Now this Ahobilam, what does it mean? Ahobilam, it refers to great strength. So in one of the Puranas it is said that when Lord Narasimha killed Hiranyakashipu and the demigods came there, they were praising the strength and the prowess and the bravery of Lord Narasimha. And they said, Aho Viryam, Aho Shauryam, Aho Baru Bahu Parakramaha, Narasimha Param Daivam, Aho Bilam, Aho Balam. So Aho means you know. Viryam, Virya refers to brave. Shaurya also refers to very heroic. Aho Bahu Parakramaha, one with extraordinary exploits. Narasimha Param Daivam, so the Supreme Lord Narasimha, Aho Bilam Aho Balam. Bala refers to strength, one of extraordinary strength. So this is how they glorified the Lord. So that is how this place came to be known as Aho Balam or Aho Bilam. Originally probably it was Aho Balam, it became Aho Bilam. So because of the extraordinary strength of Lord Narasimhadev. Another explanation for the term Ahobilam is that this term Bila refers to a cave. It is a cave in which Garuda, actually the Lord, manifested. Garuda had come to this region. Garuda, of course, is the great devotee, the carrier of Lord Vishnu. So he had performed great penances here to receive the darshan and the blessings and mercy of Lord Vishnu. After performing penances for a long, long time, the Lord appeared before him, being pleased with his devotion. And he said, I have appeared in a nearby cave in my deity form. So Garuda went there. And the cave, There was a wonderful cave in which the Lord appeared. So therefore, this place became known as Aho Bilam. Now, this is one of the 108 Divya Desams. The devotees of the Sri Sampradaya, who are great worshippers of Lord Vishnu and Lord Narasimha, they have 108 places specifically where, which are called Divya Desams, transcendental abodes, holy kshetras. And this is one amongst them. Now, for those of you, a little lesson in geography, you know that India has a peninsular part. The southern part of India is a peninsula. You know what a peninsula is? A land that is surrounded on three sides by the sea. So that's a peninsula. To revise our house, high school geography, yes? What is an island? What is a hill? What is a valley? Yes, so what is a peninsula? A land that is surrounded on three sides by the sea. So if you look at the peninsular portion of India, on along the coast side, on the western side and the eastern side, you have hills because there is a plateau. A large portion of the peninsular region of India is a plateau. And then the plateau tapers off on the coastline. So on the western coast and the eastern coast, they're called ghats. So you have the western ghats and you have the eastern ghats. So the eastern ghats are said to be a form of Adi Shesha. Shesha is the serpent bed of Lord Vishnu. And the seven hoods of the Shesha represent, the seven hills there, they're called Tirupati. We'll come to Tirupati today if we have time, or maybe tomorrow. The stomach region of Adi Shesha is Aho Bilam, the place we're talking about now. And the tail is Sri Shailam, which I just spoke about a few minutes ago. So in this way, starting from Sri Shailam, going up to Tirupati, further south, we have the body of Adi Shesha, the eastern ghats. So in the Brahmanda Purana, also this is described as the dwelling place of Hiranyakashipu, this Aho Bilam, where he lived with his family, with Prahlad and his other sons. So this Aho Bilam has two parts, the lower Aho Bilam and an upper Aho Bilam. And all together, and then there are nine temples in these two, and there is 8 plus 1, 1 in between the upper and lower Aho Bilam. So let's look at some of them. Aho Bilam Narasimha is in the upper Aho Bilam. It's the main temple, the oldest temple. And here, the Lord is in the form of Shaligram, Shila. And you can see also the Lord in the Sukhasana. Sukhasana is the pose in which most of you are sitting now. You know, it's not actually a lotus position when you sit cross-legged, but when you put your foot on top of the left thigh and your left foot on top of the right thigh, that's Padmasana, the lotus posture. But most people can't do that. So the pose in which most of us are sitting right now is Sukhasana. So you're comfortable, reasonably. So Lord Narasimha is sitting in that pose here. Sukha. Sukha means, you know, comfort of my happiness. And he's accompanied there by Chenchu Lakshmi, who was a tribal lady who became his consort. He got into trouble with Lakshmi Devi for that, but that's another story. So, in any case, so this is Aho Bilam Narasimha. And this is a very big temple, the main temple. So when you come there, usually you start by taking darshan of Aho Bilam Narasimha. Then there is Krodha Narasimha. This is a form of Varaha Narasimha. Again, the face of a boar and then the body of the lion. So there's an interesting pastime that's narrated here about this temple. After Lord Narasimhadev had appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu, he was upset with Brahma. Brahmaji, why on earth do you give all these benedictions to such asuras? You know, you just go and freely give benedictions just like that. Hiranyakashipu asks all these things, please give me the benediction, I should not be killed inside or outside, in the sky, in the land, in the water, by man, human, by animals, this and that. And you just kept going, yes, 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 yes. And then I had to come and find a way out and preserve your honor, so I had to kill him in a way that preserved your benedictions. So be very careful about the kind of benedictions you give. So the Lord was a little unhappy with Brahma. So he called Brahma, come to see me. So Brahma was very afraid to come. So he didn't want to face the wrath of the Lord, you know. Because if at all you want to understand what anger is, you have to look at Lord Narasimha. Yes? He is the very personification of anger. One time one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, I get very angry, so what should I do? And Prabhupada gave an interesting answer. He said, just remember Lord Narasimhadev's anger and your anger will disappear. You know? So there can't be any anger like the anger displayed by Lord Narasimha. So Brahma was very much aware of that. So he was afraid to come, so he didn't come. So in any case, later, the Lord's anger subsided somewhat, and Brahma was so nervous that the Vedas fell from his hands. And they were falling in free fall, and Mother Earth saw that the Vedas are falling away, so she rescued the Vedas and she placed them safely in Patala Loka. Meanwhile, after the Lord's anger had subsided, then Brahma came in front of Lord Narasimhadev. And the Lord must have spoken a few words to him, and he also pacified him, and Brahma begged for forgiveness, and they said, can I please have the Vedas back? And Lord Narasimha said, no, now, you know, so we have to find another person to do that. So who can it be? So then Brahma suggested it can be Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Devi then got charge of the Vedas. So therefore, the Lord manifested for Brahma's pleasure as Malola Narasimha. Ma refers to Lakshmi, and Lola refers to the beloved. So beloved Lakshmi, because she is the beloved consort of the Lord. So she appeared as Malola Narasimha. Just come. Yes, this is Malola Narasimha. These are very small deities, you see, not very grand. And the temples are also, most of them, except for the Ahobala Narasimha temple and one or two of the others, they're all very small. And in some places you'll find them in some caves. They don't really, from a distance, they don't look like caves. So in any case, this is Malola Narasimha, the beloved Lakshmi. That when Lord Narasimha appeared, after he was pleased with Brahma. So then we have Kroda Narasimha. And by the way, actually the Lord also brought back Lakshmi Devi and the Vedas, taking the form of an animal with one horn, also called a Kroda Rupa. And then he brought back. So this is the form in which he appeared before Brahma. Also, some people say that, but some people disagree, that Krodha, so he was very angry. So that's why this deity is called Kroda Narasimha, Krodha Narasimha. And then we have this deity called Jvala Narasimha. Now, he's sitting here in the standard position where he is tearing the chest of Hiranyakashipu. This is the place which is the most dangerous climb. So it's very dangerous. I hope that no devotees anywhere have ever had any tragedies. But it's very nice to go to this place one sometime and see this place. And this is where it's nearby that we had to at some point climb like that and go in. And beyond a certain point you come to a flat opening there, if you manage to reach, and then you have to go down and you could slip. there are stones. It's a stone surface. So if it's raining or something like that, or some dew and the stone surface is slippery, then you could slip and then you just go way down. And there's a place where there's a dhvaja. Some of the local people, they just walk like just like that, you know. They empowered with, you know, some way to do that. So this is the region also where there is the Ugrastambha, which means the pillar from where Lord Narasimhadev appeared. And this is the exact site, it is said, where Lord Narasimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu. And there is also a river there, Bhavanashini River. So instead of climbing up, some people prefer to go along the river. But those devotees who are more of the more adventurous sort, they want to climb up and go. And there's also a Raktakunda, a place where it is said that after killing Hiranyakashipu, the Lord's hands were bloodied, you know, because he had torn up the chest of the demon. So he washed his hands in this kund, in this little lake, and that became known as Raktakunda. So this is Jwala Narasimha. And then we have, now, in the lower Ahobilam. So all these deities so far were in the upper Ahobilam. Now we have the lower Ahobilam, Pavana Narasimha, on the banks of the river Pavana. And this is the most peaceful form of Lord Narasimha that you will find. He's not angry, he's not killing Hiranyakashipu, he's peaceful. And because he's on the bank of the Pavana river, so he's called Pavana Narasimha. Pavanam is one who purifies, one who delivers. Okay. Then Karanja Narasimha, Karanja. Karanja is the name of a tree actually. It has many medicinal properties. So it is here that the Lord appeared. Because he appeared under this Karanja tree, he is called Karanja Narasimha. There's a story here also about Hanuman. That one time Hanuman came there and was chanting the names of Ram. He was performing his austerities. And Lord Narasimha appeared before him and said, you're calling me. So Hanuman looked up and he was puzzled. He didn't recognize the Lord. He said, who are you? He said, you called me, so I'm here. You? No, you're not Ram. He said, yes, I am Ram. No, Ram doesn't look like you. So then he manifested the form of Ram. And then Hanuman was convinced that, yeah, okay, you're Ram. So he folded his hands and offered obeisances. And so there's a little temple of Hanuman nearby also. So this is Karanja Hanuman. This is Karanja Narasimha. He also holds a bow here, a Sharanga bow. Then there is Yogananda Narasimha. And this is a place, you can see he's sitting in a certain yogic posture. There is a patta or a cloth that is around his knees. And this is the place where he taught Prahlad some nice yoga asanas. So Prahlad had come there. So I don't know which asanas he taught him, but he taught him various asanas to do. So Prahlad learned the yogic asanas from Lord Narasimhadeva here. So he's called Yogananda Narasimha Swami. And Chhatravata Narasimha. Chhatra means an umbrella. Vat refers to a banyan tree or the tree of the banyan family. And because the Lord appeared under this tree, he's called Chhatravata Narasimha. And then there's Bhargava Narasimha. Bhargava refers to the descendant of Bhrigu Rishi, and specifically here to Parashuram. You know, when Parashuram heard about the appearance of the Lord, he rushed there. And he prayed to the Lord, please let me see you when you kill Hiranyakashipu. So the Lord granted him that darshan, that benediction. So he had the balcony seat for this grand pastime of the Lord killing Hiranyakashipu. As he was seated on the stairs of his palace, of Hiranyakashipu's palace, and he was staring, and Parshuram got a beautiful seat right in front, gazing at this whole pastime. And it is said that at that time Hiranyakashipu must have noticed that somebody is here. So he looked to the right to see Parshuram, and that's exactly the pose in which he appears here. So Parshuram also came there. Then he was very grateful to the Lord. He performed penances over here. And there is a kunda called Akshay Tirtha, in which Parshuram went and bathed afterwards, and he performed penances on the bank of this kund. So here you see the Ahobilam forest is really very beautiful and very pleasant climate, especially if you go in the winter season. And as I said earlier, some devotees do take jeeps to go up to a certain point, but if you have some time and you want to stay there for a few days, the facilities aren't that great. They're decent facilities, but don't expect, you know, super facilities there. In any case, when you go on a pilgrimage, we shouldn't expect too much of comfort, you know. And go there and explore and go to all these places, and you can do some chanting there, and it's very nice. So this is the Ugrastambha. At a distance of 8 kilometers from the upper Ahobilam temple, we can see a cleft of the mountain dividing it into two visible parts. It's a long-held view that from the cleft the Lord appeared in the form of Narasimha, and this cleft is known as Ugrastambha. Prahlad Metu, this is another place which is nearby one of the Narasimha temples. The small shrine situated in a cave on the hill is in between the Ugrastambham and the upper Ahobilam. It is dedicated to Prahlad Narasimha Swami. The image of Prahlad is installed in a small cave. So there's a little pastime about how Prahlad was thrown into this cave and something like that. Okay, so this was about Ahobilam. So we are just in time. We have 1 minute left before 9 o'clock. So today we spoke about the Lord's visit very briefly to Godavari, to Vidyanagar, the place where he met Ramananda Rai. Then he went ahead to Mangalgiri and saw Pana Narasimha. He spent some time there, chanted and danced over there, had darshan. Then he came to Sri Shailam, had darshan of Lord Shiva, had Krishna Katha with him. And then he came to Ahobilam, and he had darshan of all the deities and pastime places at Ahobilam. So we'll continue on the journey, on the pilgrimage of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tomorrow. And we'll start with Tirupati, Tirumala, which is arguably the most famous temple in India. Hare Krishna. Amen. Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai.